Welcome to the Profitable Steward Podcast with Jared Sorensen. In this series, we'll learn and explore regenerative agriculture principles. Through practices that improve soil health, animal health, and good stewardship, we are working to help you increase your productivity and profitability. Join us in learning from successful farm and ranch experts who share stories of growth from their fields to help your fields grow strong. Here is your host, Jared Sorensen.
Okay, welcome everyone. We are grateful to have Russ Wilson here with us. This is the Profitable Regeneration webinar series, and we're just very humbled by the people who register for these, the people who show up here live. We know you're busy, and we are very grateful for those who come and present to share their knowledge in regenerative agriculture space. Along those lines, we have an upcoming event with Ag Steward. It is the second regenerative legacy event. We did one in January, and it was a great success. Many of you joined that. If you're on our email list, which those that are here live, you will get access to that. For those who are listening to the podcast, watching the YouTube video, the URL to join is super simple. The cost is free. The value is really priceless. The link is legacy.agsteward.co, and we'll share that again at the end. But we encourage you to jump on, even if you're part of the group. If you haven't gone through the steps and registered, you won't get the Zoom link. And so go ahead, take a minute and do that. We do have the recording available. A lot of people have asked, everything that we do is recorded. If you register, you'll get access to that. But we encourage you to join live because that's where you get your questions answered. That's where you get the most value out of this. So today we are humbled and grateful to have Russ Wilson here with us. I reached out to him, watched what he does on social media, and thought, he seems like a great podcast guest, somebody who walks the walk, doesn't just talk the talk of being regenerative. And so we're grateful, Russ, to have you here with us. Where are you from?
Well, thanks for having me, Jared. I'm in northwestern Pennsylvania, kind of 2 hours south of Erie, Pennsylvania, 2 hours north of Pittsburgh, and about an hour and a half from Youngstown, Ohio.
Okay.
Awesome. I'm just south of the Erie snow belt.
Okay. Well, we're grateful to have you here with us. The way these things roll is we'll kind of do a little bit of presentation mode. We'll open it up for question and answers. And this is being broadcast to YouTube and also podcast channels. But if you want to get the access to the slides, we encourage you to watch it on YouTube. And that channel is The Profitable Ag Steward on YouTube. So look for that, subscribe to it, and you get to get more of the message when you jump on there. So let's have you jump right in and kind of give your introduction and jump into the presentation, Russ.
Okay, this is a video of my son moving cows. Everybody's pretty much, if you're in regenerative agriculture, you're moving cows. This here would have been in January sometime. We move our cows twice a day in the wintertime. And you can see that one calf still sucking there. We leave our calves on for 10 months. Here's a 30-second tour of the farm. This is the east side of the farm, and then we're going to be traveling to the west side of the farm. And you can see all the paddocks that we break it up. And over a course of a year, we have over 1,000 paddocks that we build. The cows are right here, and that's a cover crop field. We do cover crops. And this here was a corn field. And that would have been from a couple of years ago. We didn't plant any corn last year because of the drought that we had in May. We have a lot of infrastructure on the farm. We're broke down into, like, I don't know how many paddocks. I think there's 40 some paddocks that we got it broke down into. And then we break it down further with the fencing. And you can see all the big thing for us is the water line. If I had to do it over, I wouldn't have any interior fencing, but the water is going out, talking to other farmers, doing consulting work, presentations, whatever. Water is the biggest challenge for almost every farm out there. And so we went ahead. We have about 8,000 feet of buried line. And then over here, this is about 4,000 feet of above ground line. And we use all frost-free hydrants. We don't have any fixed watering points. And then we have a lease farm up the road from us, a mile and a half up the road. We put a perimeter fence on it, and we have no water. So I built a solar water system, and we pump. There's a stream down in here. We pump water out of a flowing stream up to the cows. And then, of course, we break that down with our temporary fencing. And to get to our lease farm, we set fence on both sides of the road and we run them up the road. For two of us, it takes us 2 hours to set the mile and a half, or it's actually 3 miles of fence if you count both sides. And it takes us 2 hours for two of us to move the cows a mile and a half up the road. It takes around 30 to 40 minutes for the cows traveling. So that's set the fence and pull it out. It used to be on our farm, we used to solely focus on the livestock, and things weren't going so well. Back, I would say 2010, 2011, we were having a lot of health issues with the cattle. And back then, we just had the cow calf, and we weren't making any money. Basically, we were just throwing money out. And when we fir and I basically threw my hands in the air, and it's like, we got to do something different. So my sole focus went to the soil, and that's why I have, earthworms, dung beetles, microbes, all that up at the top, because that's what comes first on my farm is the soil. Soil comes first. My livestock are nothing more than tools to keep the soil healthy. And in turn, they have us a harvestable, profitable product in the end. But we have the cow calf, we have hair sheep, we have equine. The cow calf, we're down and way down in numbers. We're down to about 70 head of cows right now. The phrase sell high, buy low. Well, we sold high. And so our cow herd's the smallest it's been. We have a bulletproof set of hair sheep. We've never had to treat for worms. We never trimmed a foot. We've never had hoof rot. And we don't assist with lambing. So we have a really, really good flock of sheep. And that's our fourth flock of sheep. It took us four flocks to get us a good flock of sheep. And then, we run mammoth donkeys, and we have a couple saddle mules, but we breed the donkeys for guard donkeys, so that gives us profit onto the farm. But we also use them for recreation as well. We ride them in the Allegheny National Forest. We've been down in the Blue Ridge Mountains down in Tennessee, so we ride our donkeys and our mules, and then we have a few hives of honeybees. We run a little bit of poultry, not a lot. And then we also have hogs that we have out on pasture. So, we're a very diverse farm, and we also do mushrooms. We have perennial vegetables like rhubarb, asparagus. What else do we have? A tree nursery. We raise trees. So we're very diverse. But back to the livestock. In 2011, we only had 120 grazing days, and we thought that we were rotationally grazing, and we were moving the cows. At the time, we only had the cows, and we were moving every 7 to 14 days, and we could only have 45 animal units. That's all our farm would support. I mean, and that's making every stitch of hay, everything. So the turning point for us was in 2016. In 2016, we were able to double our carrying capacity and stop making hay. We actually stopped making hay back in 2013 area. And from that point on, our 10-year average is 309 grazing days with a stocking rate of one animal unit per 1.8 acres. And an animal unit's 1,000 pounds of animal, whether it's a 2,500 pound calves or 1,000 pound sheep or a 1,000 pound cow. An animal unit's 1,000 pounds of animal. So it's not that I got lucky just one year and we were almost able to make it. We've been able to stay out there and we're able to replicate that. And in my area, it's very, very difficult to replicate. Everybody around me says you can't graze. And we fed our first bale of hay this year on March 1st. So we've been on hay for what, 42 days or something like that. And we're fixing to turn the cows and the sheep out probably the end of next week. So we'll fed hay less than 50 days this year. So that's a huge deal. And back in 2011, 45 animal units, we were making all the hay we could. We purchased 3,500 gallons of diesel fuel, $2,400 in plastic wrap, and we applied half the fertilizer of what the soil tests told us we could. So having 45 animal units, 45 calves on the ground, there was no profit at the end of the day. I mean, we were in the red, and for me, that wasn't acceptable. So 2016, we went to 90 animal units, and we've only purchased from 2016 on, we've only purchased 200 gallons of diesel fuel a year, which is a huge, huge difference. And I have a lot of learning. They say it takes 5,000 hours to get a doctor's degree. I probably have four doctor's degrees in regenerative farming. So my thing is I get up early in the morning and I'll research for 2, 3 hours every day to try and refine and make things better. But here was one of the turning points for me is the stored feed cost on the average farm. And it doesn't matter if you're a stocker operation, you're a sheep operation. Stored feed cost is the number one input on a farm. And for me, I wanted to try to get those inputs out because that's where my profit's at, is in those stored feed costs. So this here research, there's many, many researches, papers out there on this, and they all basically say the same thing. About 52% of your cost on your farm is your stored feed cost. So that's was what I was targeting. And then when we started selling equipment, I'm down. I have my big tractor on the farm now is a 49 horsepower tractor, and I basically use it to unload hay. And I run it less than 8 hours a year. I cross my fingers whenever I go to start it now because, you let equipment sit around too long, you know what happens. The hoses rot and it can cause you problems. So that here's my daughter. I used to get, I can't set all that fence. So this is my daughter when she's four. She's 13 now. She actually manages the sheep flock. We're up to about 70 ewes, and she tells me we're going to 120 ewes, so I'm not arguing with her. But I used to get all the time that, so here's a 4-year-old out setting fence and moving cows. And when she was that age, if she didn't go with me at least once a day, I would get a kicking hissy fit because she didn't get to go be with the cows. So, and this here would have been in the fall. I don't remember what year it is, but this here would have been, we were grazing stockpile. It would have probably been in December sometime. So I guess that's about all I have for introduction. Wise.
Yeah, that is great. Great to get some context for where you're from, the conditions that you're in, and the progress that you've made.
Yeah, we've made a lot of progress, and it wasn't always that we could be out grazing on the 1st of March and not have a muddy mess. So it did take a while to get soil structure built. And one of our main goals is to drive those roots as deep as we can. And having those big, deep roots and having all that biomass on top of the snow or on top of the soil acts as a geotextile fabric. So, we can be out there if we have 2 inches of rain or 3 inches of rain, we can still be out there and not make a muddy mess.
Yeah. Well, kind of before we jump into other questions, if there are other things that you want to share, we can do that, and then we can kind of lead and go wherever the group wants to, or let it evolve.
So to be honest with you, I'd rather answer questions because, that's, I can sit here and talk all day long, but it is people or are folks able to take away from that? I'd rather answer questions if we have some questions.
Yeah. So those of you who are on here live, just go ahead and either raise your virtual hand and we'll unmute you. You can ask your question or type your question in the
Yeah.
chat. So Tanner, did you have a question? Maybe just hit unmute. So something for you. What as you transitioned to more regenerative, what would you say was the biggest challenge that you had to overcome to be able to double your stocking rate to?
Well, for me, making hay, growing up in a conventional dairy, only knowing conventional, I had to unlearn the conventional thing to learn the regenerative thing. So one of the hardest things that I had to wrap my head around was to send that hay baler out to driveway and not have a way of making hay and having stored, having my hay, that was kind of like a my kind of like my bank of hay, and I was safe for the winter. Having that uneasy, not knowing what's gonna happen feeling. So, and talking to a lot of other guys, there's a lot of other guys, they have a hard time with it as well. I really struggled with that for a while. So that was probably my biggest hurdle, I guess you could say.
Yeah, what would you recommend to somebody else who's in that same situation,
Well,
gone through that?
for me, I was able to squirrel away about almost a year's worth of hay. So I didn't really have to rely on other hay producers. For me, I was lucky enough to find a good hay producer. I just need to pick the phone up and say, hey, I need a load of hay. And having a relationship with hay producers is kind of a big thing. However, if you can buy your hay in the spring, because that's when it's the cheapest, everybody's trying to unload their hay that they have in their barns. For me, I buy the lowest quality hay as I possibly can for my livestock. They're gestational. So they don't need, rocket fuel in order to, and I don't try to finish anything through the winter as well. Now, if you're finishing animals, that's a different story. You're going to have a higher quality feed, almost dairy quality feed. But for all the more that we finish, most of our stuff goes for breeding stock. Not everything makes breeding stock, and then we sell quarters and halves. And then the worst result is to send something to the sale barn, which that's nothing that the small producer wants to do because that's a money losing proposition, sending stuff to the sale barn. So I try not to send anything to the sale barn unless it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, that's good. Looks like Brian has his hand raised. If you want to go ahead and unmute, and then we'll have William, and then I'll jump into a couple questions that are submitted in the chat.
Yes, sir. So I'm in a rangeland management class right now, and we're learning a lot about how much forage producing land and how to measure all that stuff. And I was wondering how many pounds of hay would you say that you utilize on top of the regenerated on top of your forage and your natural forage?
How much hay I purchase, is that what you mean?
How much your
Yeah.
cattle consumes?
We bring about 100 large square bales to the farm every year.
Okay.
Versus we were feeding around 700 round bales a year. So that it was a huge change. And doubling the carrying capacity easily pays for the hay that we buy. And you got to keep in mind that hay, you're also bringing nutrients to your farm. It's been said, you're bringing $45 worth of fertilizer per ton of hay that you buy.
Yeah, just for context, what did hay cost you this year?
Hay's running around $120 a ton, and I'm getting around
Okay.
three square bales to the ton. So whatever that figures out.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
So I guess probably my hay cost me a little less than $4,000, because a load of hay cost me around 950 or something like that.
And your opportunity cost of making hay, did you ever figure that up?
Yeah,
Make.
it cost me $136 a ton to produce hay.
Yeah, and you can buy it for 120, so it's kind
Yeah,
of.
it just didn't make any sense. And I really enjoyed making hay back whenever I was making it, but doing what I'm doing now, I'm not sure I could go back to making hay.
Yeah.
I did. I really enjoyed making hay, but I found a better way, or a lot easier way. As far as the livestock go, I haven't worked an 8 hour a day since we got rid of the hay making equipment. I still put, 10, 12 hour days in, but it's not, as far as the livestock go, I haven't worked an 8 hour a day since we got rid of the hay making equipment.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it just opens up opportunities for me to do other things.
Yeah, which are profitable, right?
Yeah,
Not
right.
money. Not, yeah. Sometimes those addictions to machinery and iron are pretty expensive. Go ahead,
Yeah.
William.
Hey Russ, so when you switched over from conventional to this regenerative, who were the scientists or teachers that taught you how to do this stuff?
There's a lot of people out there, and in saying I've researched 2 to 3 hours a day, I guess more than anything would be, let's talk about the mentors that I've had through my process. Alan Savory is one of the ones that really, give me a kick in the butt, just watching and reading some of his stuff. Johann Zeitzman. Let me see who else. My biggest person that helped me the most was my USDA grazing specialist, the NRCS grazing specialist. That was my biggest mentor. And I was lucky on the aspect that he had the outside of the box thinking, because I've run into other grazing specialists, and they don't necessarily have that out of the box thinking. And he was great on the aspect that, I asked him about moving cows 4 times a day. We were moving cows 4 times a day, and what his thoughts. And him and I used to have a running argument about clipping pastures. He would say, "Oh, I don't know, you might have to clip a pasture here and there or whatever." Well, he's actually quit clipping his pastures 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, we've got a couple of these questions kind of tied together here, and you can look at them in the chat if you want also. But when you something about the biomass that you leave on the soil, what does that mean? And that kind of ties in with the next question of how many pounds do you leave behind after grazing, and how long is your rest or your recovery period?
Well, I guess that's kind of a loaded question, because it depends on, what the biomass is there to start with. Most generally, I try to take less than 50% of the biomass. And the reason for that is the roots stop growing if you start grazing more than 50% at a time. Say you go up to 80%, your roots die back, and your roots are indicative, or your grass above the ground is indicative to the grass that's below the ground, or the roots that are below the ground. And my main goal is to drive roots as deep as possible on the aspect that I can access water and nutrients. We don't suffer the summertime slump like we used to. Our cool season grasses typically keep growing. But I guess to answer the question, we have on average across the farm, it's 100 plus days of rest. Now that's kind of, that's average across the farm. Not every field is the same. We'll have fields that are rested 30 days, and we'll have fields that are rested 365 days. It just depends on what I'm trying to do for the soil. If a pasture's thinning a little bit, so we need to rest it, let those grasses go mature and produce seed heads and put that seed to the ground. And on the shorter graze periods, like the 30 day graze period, that would be trying to open the canopy up and encourage other species to grow, would be the shorter rest periods. So it's all over the place on the farm. Now, as far as stockpile goes, I like to see at least 6,000 pounds of dry matter for stockpile. Your cows will not graze through 30 inches of snow to get less than 6,000 pounds of dry matter. And we graze through 30 inches of snow.
Yeah.
It's got to be worth their while in order to go through the snow. And
Yeah.
probably the best, there used to be, everything you read, it's perennial ryegrass or fescues the best for stockpile. I kind of changed my mind on that. I kind of lean towards orchard grass. The quality in the orchard grass actually stays good, and it's probably a better forage for stockpile for us anyhow.
Yeah, there's another question about what other grass species you have, and maybe
Oh,
are you.
that's a great question, because we started cataloging species on the farm, and our species on the farm, we've cataloged 179 species growing inside the fences, and every one of them is eaten by the livestock. And that includes the toxic plants and everything. Now, I don't recall right off the top of my head. I want to say that we have 20 some species of grasses. The main grasses are orchard grass, fescue, and then we get into like eastern gamma grass, big blue stem, switchgrass, Indian grass, Virginia wild rye. There's coastal panic grass. What else do we have? We have some sedge grasses. We graze those. A lot of people don't like them, but we've found that it's easier to manage them than it is to try and get rid of them, because they're just going to come back anyhow. So.
And are you regularly integrating cover crops? And is that in your field, or is it?
We're kind of getting away from the cover crops now. When we first started transitioning, it was important for us to have the cover crops. And that was before our grasses and everything is productive as is today. We had a research study with Penn State University, and it was on integration of livestock onto cover cropping systems. And through doing that research, we had 30% of our grazing on 10% of our land. 30% of our grazing on 10% of our land using annual cover crops. That would include the winter cover crops and the warm season cover crops as well. So, a huge portion of your grazing can be used.
Yeah, what when you were you interseeding into perennial pastures when you were using cover crops?
I actually initially I would do a burn down with an herbicide. And then we'd plan into that. And then once we got that, we could go year after year without having to use herbicide.
Okay.
But we have done a lot of interseeding. Most generally, if we were to do interseeding with a no-till drill, we would graze the pasture tight and then come back 10 days later, graze it tight again, basically set those perennials back to allow the seeds that we put in to possibly have a chance of starting to grow.
Yeah, and what was your success rate at that, and kind of what time of year would you?
I'll tell you what, the most success that I've had with interseeding into pastures is to broadcast your seed in front of your livestock on the first graze of the year. I've had the best, hands down, the best interseedings. It beats out frost seeding. Whenever you broadcast them seeds, they're not in rows. They're, a seed every 2 inches or so, and your livestock, I would tighten livestock down naturally, but they get the seed to soil contact, and hands down, that is with my experience, that was the best way to interseed permanent pastures.
And were you interseeding perennials or annual covers?
Both. About 40% of my farm lays wet, and if you look at the Webb Soil Survey, it says it's not suitable for agricultural land. And one of the cover crops that do well in wet soils is Japanese millet. So I would interseed with a lot of Japanese millet. It'd do really well, and it would fight the competition. I tried for a number of years to try to get corn to interseed, but corn just cannot take the competition. So, and I kind of give up after about 5 years of that. And we'll use sunflowers, annual sunflowers, either gray stripe or black oilseed. That's a great one to interseed. And then, of course, your perennial grasses and clovers and stuff.
Yeah, perfect. That's good. That is something that's very intriguing to me to regenerate some marginal irrigated land, and I haven't cracked the code on that. But
Here's
William.
one that I did is we let one of our warm season grass fields go to seed, and we'd move the cows in, and the first thing your cows would eat is the seed heads. So I put them in there for 2 days, and then what I did is I moved them into another field for half a day, and then I'd move them back into the warm season grasses for a half a day, and I'd keep them tight, get the good manure distribution like we like. And I have actually been able to move switchgrass and big bluestem into other fields by doing that.
Okay. That is pretty cool. Pretty
Yeah,
ingenious.
it is. It is. It's really cool, and it's the first I got to see it was last year. It's really neat.
Awesome. William, did you have another question?
Yeah, so where you're grazing these cattle through really deep snow, what have you had to do over the years with like breeding or genetics? Or, I mean, do you have some that don't know how to eat through the snow? Did you have to breed them to a certain, did you have to teach them to be smart?
Well, I don't think it takes a special breed or a special cow to be able to graze through the snow. It did take some learning on their behalf. Because most of the time, if you put a cow in a field of snow, they don't realize that there's something underneath there. So they're going to stand at the gate and bawl. So what I did is I took my side by side and I ran a couple paths through the snow so they could get down in there and see that the grass was in there. And it took 2 or 3 days, but once they got a hang of it, and Jared, I have some video on that PowerPoint that I could show later on here if you'd like to. I'm sure the guys would like to see that.
Yeah, we could sure pull that back up. There's a little bit of a lag time. Is there another? Do you have I don't know how the video will load onto YouTube. Hopefully better, but it was really
Laggy.
segmented.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you have another resource that you can point people to,
Oh,
or if you want to share, upload it and share it.
I also have a YouTube channel, and I have a whole series from 2 years ago of winter grazing that the folks could go check out.
Yeah, what is your channel to?
It's YouTube / Russ Wilson.
Okay. So if you just search for Russ.
Well, don't search for just Russ Wilson.
Okay.
Put in Russ Wilson grazing if you want to find
Okay.
me. If you just type in Russ Wilson, you're going to get the football player.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you
Gotcha.
got to put Russ Wilson grazing in, or you can access it through my website, www.russwilson.net.
Okay, perfect.
You can
Yeah.
get, yeah, you can access my YouTube channel through that.
Awesome. Benton, did you have a question? I saw you muted. If not, we're going to call on you anyway. No, we're good. So with all that you've done on the regenerative side, what have you found to be the most profitable enterprise or enterprise mix? And just maybe switch gears and let's talk a little bit about the.
That's going to change from year to year. That's the great have the great thing of having the diversity on the farm. Like this past year, my big thing was cattle. We made the most money this year on cattle, and last year it was sheep. So it's going to change year to year. Depends on markets. Depends on who wants what. And like our cattle. And our sheep, for that matter, they're animals. They're not babied. They're not pampered, and they can get out there and get the job done and not cost you a whole bunch of money. And so I've kind of created a niche market for those animals. We've shipped cattle all over the eastern U.S. here this year, and I have a list. My wife told me today we have a list of 7 bulls that are sold already for this coming calf crop. And then, the same goes for the sheep. People respect the thought of not having to do a lot of worming and hoof trimming and all that. So we've created a kind of another niche market with the sheep on the aspect that they're animals that can get out there and get it done. So our main thing is breeding stock. And then, like I said, not everything makes breeding stock, and then we'll finish the cows out, and then we sell lambs off the farm. Usually we try to sell as many lambs off the farm as we can, because if you know as well as I do, if you take them to the sale barn, you're gambling. It's a gamble. Our first lamb crop that we had on the farm, we had, I don't remember how many it was, but I loaded a 3/4 ton pickup truck down, and it was sagging. We went to the auction barn with them. It'd be the first crop of lambs, and it was for Easter, and I called the auctioneer barn. And, oh yeah, the lamb prices are great, great, great. Well, I took that load down there, and everybody else took their sheep in at the same time, and I come home with a check for $55. Yeah. And that's really hard to take. As far as, that's a gamble. So we've kind of created our own markets. And
Yeah.
I think for the most part, most small producers, that's kind of what they need to do, is kind of create their own market.
Yeah, that's good. So yeah, guys, anybody that's on here live, go ahead and type your questions in the chat and we'll kind of moderate those, or you can raise your virtual hand and we'll unmute you. But a lot of our participants get asked this question, Russ. How do you get started when the barrier to entry is kind of high? What would you recommend to young people that have the dream, They want to do it. How do they start?
Well, there's a couple different ways. Number one is lease land and run somebody else's cattle, run stockers. Custom graze, if you're trying to get in the market, that's probably the easiest way to do it. Now, going out and doing consulting work, I've actually ran into some older gentlemen that don't have anybody to leave their farms to. So they're actually looking for people to come in and work with them for a period of time and perhaps, sell the farm to them or do some sort of a trade. So that's kind of another opportunity for young folks to break into the regenerative agriculture.
Yeah, there's a huge need with the
But, we've done custom grazing, and some of the best money that we've made on the farm was custom grazing.
What made you go steer away from custom grazing? Are there any pitfalls that you would warn people about?
What happened to me was with our custom grazing is when the dairy market crashed here a few years ago, all my dairy farmers went away. So I kind of lost that opportunity to take their heifers in and graze them for them through the summertime. Pitfalls, the heifers that I would get would be they'd spend their life on cement and they weren't broke to fence. So that was really challenging. Getting those dairy heifers broke to fence, and sometimes you just don't get them broke to fence. You just end up sending them home. So that's one of the great things of custom grazing. You can just, if you don't want them, if you don't like them, just send them home. So, but as far as pitfalls go, if you have a good, you need a good contract. A good contract that breaks down the verbiage of who pays what and how long you're going to do what and what each party's going to do. So that is kind of an important deal is to have a good contract.
Agreed. Yep. Handshakes are great, but
Yeah,
memory.
I grew up on a handshake was good, was good, but anymore, it doesn't seem like the handshake is binding anymore.
Well, and even for my, yeah, there's so many things that we're trying to manage, trying to remember all the details, and just having that written down, even. And probably maybe especially with family members that we're dealing with,
It's a
it's just a
challenge.
to have.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Absolutely. Do you do regular monitoring on your operation, and what does that look like?
Monitoring, like
Ecological monitoring.
every Sunday morning I walk the farm. Every
That's cool.
Sunday morning I walk the farm. There's a lot of paddocks, and I try to devise a plan, where the livestock going next to for their greatest benefit to the soil. And sometimes, you don't realize it, but some fields kind of get out of hand and get out of control on you really quick if you don't do that monitoring, I walk the farm. And then of course, we always dig soil pits and, check the soil life and stuff like that.
Somebody's asking, what do you charge on a custom grazing per animal you
You know,
on
that's
a
that, you know, that's a great question. The way that I had it worked out is I worked off the animal's weight and how much dry matter that they were going to consume. And so let's take a 200 to 300 heifer and then went from like 3 to 4 and then, so on and so forth up the chain. And I would figure out how much that animal would consume, and essentially I was just selling grass, and then I would charge a head fee per day You got to figure out how much that you want to take care of the group of animals per day, and how much you want for your grass, and are they going to provide the mineral, and if do they want to feed any grain? I always made that up to those guys, to the people that I worked with.
That's a good model, and I know it varies a lot depending on region.
I know a lot of folks, they try to do it on weight, or they try to do it on so much per head per day, but those animals, depending on their size, they all eat different.
Just probably asking in your region, what other people are charging, kind of get a baseline, and then that's
Typically what they'll charge is like 75 cents per head per day just to take care of them, and then figure out how much they want per ton for grass. And typically that you can sell your grass cheaper than you can buy hay. So, $80, $90 a ton for the dry matter. And that's pretty much how it'd break down.
Well, as you've been on this journey of regeneration and become a student and focused, kind of like my journey, going from cattle rancher to grass farmer to microbe farmer. And I really love how you say that the soil drives the operation, like what the soil needs and where. Talk a little bit about that and how people, if they're just in that transition or if this is completely new, like probably for you and me when we started down that path, like there wasn't a lot of literature and it
No,
was.
there's a lot of question, and like stockpile, you look at stockpile, the average eye would say that that's the worst grass in the world to be feeding your animals.
Just any I guess resources, Nicole Masters is kind of the one that got me started looking in the soil instead of just looking at the grass and the cover on top of the soil, but actually looking. But where would you say would be for somebody who's wanting to make that transition to being truly regenerative, which I think you have to focus on soil health, where do they start?
For me, what I did is, I had to prove everything to myself in order to quantify what I was doing, because like you say, there wasn't much research back when we first started this. And I've forage sampled hundreds, if not thousands, of forage samples, and I would test it individual grasses or individual plant species. And take for instance New England aster. It's typically a weed in most pasture systems, but New England aster is high in zinc. We have another plant, a native plant here. It's called cup plant, CUP plant, and it's high in calcium. All these plants have different nutrients in them, so those plants are actually bringing nutrients up for the other plants. But not only that, having our cows and the sheep and everything eaten, everything. I mean, my cows eat water hemlock, which is considered the most toxic plant in the state of Pennsylvania. They eat milkweed, they eat all this, but they have a very diverse ration, and in having that diverse ration, it's just better all the way around. Everything is just so much healthier. We haven't had a vet to the farm since 2012. And before that, we were on a first name basis.
What is your animal health protocol at this point? Do you do mineral? Do you do wormers? Do you do any
We don't worm, we don't worm, we don't vaccinate. We used to have a vitamin mineral pack that we used to do. We used to mix it up in a cement mixer. We would test the forages and send us those. We'd send the forage samples out, and then they would adjust the forage samples to the deficiencies in those forage samples for the livestock. And we've kind of gotten away from that. Now, basically, all we're doing is we're feeding a sea salt with selenium in it.
Okay.
That's all we're basically doing.
And what do you attribute that to, the ability to be able to wean off of?
The diversity in the plants, and they have, like I say, they have all, there's all kinds of micronutrients in each individual plant. It's different, and having those individual plants, it balances the rations out, or balance the ration, but also balances the mineral and vitamin and all that in the livestock.
Perfect. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, it's been wonderful. We've been going here for about an hour, and so why don't we wrap this up? Russ, was there any kind of, well, final thoughts that you want to share? And then if you could just share again how people get in contact with you. You say you do consulting work, and feel free to give a plug for that, how to contact you for that if people are interested in learning more from based on what you've been here today.
Sure. If you're in a conventional system and you're thinking about going regenerative, don't be afraid to go to some of these conferences and different places. Try and learn as much as you can. Now, I'm in the East Coast, but a lot of the stuff that we learned or that I learned come out of South Africa from Johann Zeitzman, and that's an arid, dry place. So whenever you're listening to other people or reading books, try to pull the principles out of that and try and figure out how you can apply that to your ranch or your farm. No two farms are the same. We all know that, but the principles are basically the same. Whenever you do that, it will help you out. I do consulting work. I go to farms, and I also have people come to my farm. I have the YouTube channel, and I also do speaking. I go to do a lot of conferences. I've been very busy this past winter. I was just actually up in Canada. It's the first time I've ever been out of the United States. That was kind of interesting.
Cool.
I didn't know for sure if I was going to get through or not. I got a million questions at the border crossing, but probably the easiest way to find me is just go to my website, www.russwilson.net. And that has, that will take you to my YouTube channel. And I guess I don't have my Facebook listed. I probably post more on my Facebook than YouTube. YouTube's been kind of challenging lately because of time constraints. But there is 200 and I don't know 240 some videos on my YouTube channel. And but you can find me on Facebook as well. I post a lot on Facebook.
Yeah.
Just look me up on Russ Wilson. And you can also find, I also have a farm page. It's Wilson Land and Cattle Company. So you can find me on Facebook. Just friend me, and I try to post. I used to post daily videos, but it's been kind of challenging here recently. So it's down to a couple videos a week if I find something interesting that folks can use. And another thing that we're doing too, is I developed a valve to keep water from freezing, because I have water hydrants out there, and I needed to get water to my livestock without having to have freeze ups. So I developed a valve, which I sell that on my website as well. It's in Canada. I've had folks use it to negative 35 without any freeze ups. So feel free to check that out. And if you don't want to buy one from me, that is fine. I actually have a video on YouTube on how to make it. So if you want to just source your own parts and make it, that's fine too. But the only reason I started making it is because a lot of folks either don't have time or they don't want to.
Yeah.
So, but if you're handy and you want to do it, it's on my YouTube channel. You can, and if you can't find it, look me up on Facebook or shoot me. You can shoot me an email, ancattle@gmail.com. Shoot me an email and I'll be glad to help you out or answer any questions you may have.
Perfect. Yeah. And that again is how I connected with Russ, is just
Yeah.
watching the stuff that he did on YouTube. I'm like, man, this guy's he's cool.
Yeah, we pushed I've been accused of pushing the envelope. So yeah, I do. I push the envelope and that's what's helped us be profitable.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, we really appreciate how you've been able to share that knowledge with us here today. Encourage you to reach out to Russ and contact him if you have further questions. Check out his YouTube channel and social media handles. And
Sure.
that's really good. I'm going to share just a little bit here about what we have coming up with Ag Steward. We have the second event of the year. It is called the Regenerative Legacy Summit. It is the same focus that we had on the summit back in January. And so this is the URL is at the top, legacy.agsteward.co. And scroll down. So it is happening in 11 days. So time is short. Registration is super simple. Just click on that, put in your name, first and last name, email address, and phone. And again, the cost is free on this one. These are the things that we're going to be talking about. How to be profitable without subsidizing your farm or ranch or your business. That's not only government subsidies, but unpaid labor, tapping into equity in the ranch. We've talked about in this webinar today about the need to create a legacy plan and to be able to help not only the soil, but also to have the business structure behind that. Because if we can do all the great things that we love to do on the regenerative side, and if we don't have the profitability piece figured out, then we may not be there for time and so into generation. So that's why we decided to focus on this legacy point, is we have to be profitable at the same time and asking ourselves those hard questions, like, this is the way it's always been done, but is this the right way? And like Russ pointed out, what is right for the soil? Kind of coined the term of regenerational agriculture, meaning that that next generation wants to come in, creating sustainable cash flow with that, because we're not going to go broke, as Bud Williams pointed out. We're not going to go broke by a difference in our net worth. We're going to go broke because we don't have cash flow. And how do we create positive cash flow in a sustainable manner so we're not decreasing our net worth? And it's just a fun place to learn. I know some of you were on here. If anybody wants to pipe up that was on the one in January and share what your takeaways were, I would love that. So my wife and I are the hosts, principally me. I put her picture on there because she makes me look better. But here's the lineup of speakers that we have. So Walter Lynn, Regenerative Economics, and told him, he's a CPA, he's got to keep it engaging, and he will. Tony Malmberg from the AV Hub, Joshua and Tara Dukart, if they've been on our webinar, I really love them because they are a couple that are doing the work of regeneration and they're teaching it. Many of you know John Haskell from RanchRight. Jim Gerrish is kind of a household name in grazing. Roger Savory, we're grateful, honored to be able to have him. Dave Voth is local, and he has started a consulting company. He's worked on millions of acres here in the arid West. And Jaime is also going to be here with us. Brooke LeVan, he practices biodynamics at a profitable scale. And then many of you know Bob Kinford, talking about stockmanship. So that is our lineup of speakers. There's testimonials there, and grateful to our sponsors, the Savory Hub, or the Savory Institute, and the AV Hub. out of California who we're affiliated with. But we encourage you to jump on there, get registered, and we look forward to seeing many of you on there. Is anybody who was on there last time? I know there was a couple people, but anybody will put you on the spot here. If not, I'm going to default to William because he's on everything. But I know Wendell and Tom, you guys were on the last one. Would you guys be willing to offer kind of maybe a takeaway, short testimonial of what you thought of the last summit that we had?
I could just, I'll just throw in a little pitch here. For me, it's just a good opportunity to learn. And sometimes when I'm on a seminar, especially one with multiple speakers in that, when I get to the end, I'm kind of overwhelmed, you know, because there's so much good stuff. And I've learned through the years to stop, back up, and pick up one or two things that really hit the nail on the head. In fact, as generally as I'm taking notes, I'll highlight something, you know, that's the aha moment. That's my takeaway from the whole thing. And so I kind of encourage that. But good times.
Thanks, Wendell. I appreciate that. Yeah, Wendell's a regular on a lot of what we do and just committed to learning. It's pretty awesome to see. William, any thoughts that you had? I know you participated in the last one that we had and had there's kind of drinking from a fire hose a little bit, but we encourage you to take notes. And then it is available on YouTube. On our YouTube channel, you can go back and we've got the individual speakers broken out that you can go back and watch.
Oh, yeah, I just, the more we can learn, the better off we are. I would say when you come to this, come with some questions. So, what's going wrong on your farm? What's going right? Just kind of have a real clear vision, and then you can get the most out of it. But it's just interesting because Jared's so well connected with some of the greatest minds in the industry that, I mean, anybody who misses it, you're missing out because some of the best people are here. Like you mentioned, Brooke Levan with the biodynamics, his farm's got the highest soil. Like when Ray Archuleta did the soil samples all over the country, his soil was so good that it broke Ray Archuleta's computer program. He had to, I mean, not literally, but he had to redo the chart.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are top notch. So, yeah, let your communities know that this is happening. So, yeah, that's my two cents.
Appreciate that, William. Tom, did you have something?
Well, I was just going to say I've been accused of just watching too much stuff, but one of the things that really stuck out about that to me, which I don't know if it made any difference to anybody else, was that you can't do it alone. And Jared's brought all kinds of people in. William's doing the garden and that sort of thing, and was to me was I got to do a little better job of being part of a community of some sort that way, instead of trying to do it all on our own.
Yeah.
That was the main thing that kind of stuck out to me. There were interesting things about every speaker had something. So, I
Perfect.
like the soils part. I'm always a soils junkie, but yeah.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, appreciate your input and appreciate your support. And as you mentioned, building that community is one of the missions that we have at Ag Steward because, oftentimes if we try to be that rugged individualist who figures everything out, we're that statistic of that person who goes broke or burns out or, kind of dies with the mission still left inside of them. And so we don't want that to happen. We do these to offer support. And from a holistic standpoint, like we're going to talk about the fun things. Some of the things that we might talk about might not be as fun, but they're going to be just as relevant to creating a regenerative business. The relationship side, our our emotional health, the financial side. If you're not a numbers person and you might think, well, that doesn't apply to me, we encourage you to tune in and listen to that. And if that's not your thing, maybe find somebody who can help you with that, because it's an important piece to having a sustainable and truly regenerative business. So that is coming up 23rd and 24th of April. Those that are listening on the podcast, it's not too late to jump on legacy.agsteward.co and hope to see you on there. So with that, everybody, we're going to go ahead and log off. Russ, again, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a privilege to get to know you better, and we will hope to catch you again. This is kind of one of those things where I'm sure we just scratched the surface, and there's probably a lot more here.
Yeah, we could go on and on and on. So, but I appreciate everybody logging on and tuning in, and I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks, everybody.
Thanks for joining us on the Profitable Steward Podcast. Want to learn more about making your enterprise more profitable? Check out Ag Steward on our website, www.agsteward.fyi. Here at Ag Steward, we're working hard to make sure you have the latest tools and knowledge from the field of regenerative agriculture. Subscribe to our podcast to keep up with the latest info and help us spread the word by giving this video a thumbs up, sharing this information with other farmers, and as always, please join the conversation by leaving us a rating and a review so we can help you to keep growing strong.